CMAG, hello and welcome to Insight, the Scientific Computing Podcast. On episode number 21, we'll be discussing the CMAG build system. I'm Matt McCormick, a medical imaging researcher at Kitware, your moderator and host on today's show. And joining me this week are three very insightful panelists. David Cole joined forces with Kitware in February 2005. His contributions to the open source world are primarily found in the CMake and C-Dash source trees, but also in ITK, VTK, and ActiveViz.net. Most recently, he's been the driving force behind building and release binaries, acting as the CMake release manager. How are you doing today, David?
I'm good, thank you.
Bill Hoffman is a founder, vice president, and CTO for Kitware Inc. Bill has 20-plus years of experience with large C++ systems. He's a lead architect of the CMake cross-platform build system and co-author of the Mastering CMake book. How are you doing today, Bill?
I'm doing fine.
And Katie Huff is a PhD student conducting computational nuclear engineering research at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and until recently was the benevolent dictator of the Hacker Within, a primo scientific computing interest group. How are you, Katie?
Excellent. Thanks, Matt.
Today we're going to be discussing the CMake build system. Bill, what is the CMake build system?
Well, CMake is a tool that helps people build C, C++, and Fortran code in a cross-platform manner, having a single input file in a simple language that specifies which files you want to build and what type of targets you want to build, such as executables, shared libraries, or static libraries, and also any custom output that you need to generate during the build process. And it does this across all the popular platforms, Mac, Windows, Linux. And one of the unique things about CMake is that it allows developers to use whatever tools they are most efficient with, thus taking advantage of the most scarce resource on a project, which is the developer. So, for example, if someone's very experienced with Visual Studio, they could use the full Visual Studio IDE, but if there are other people on the team that like using a Linux KDE, KDevelop environment, or maybe a Qt creator environment, those people can also work on the same project and they can share the same build files and be able to work together in a more cohesive way than if you had separate build systems for each platform.
So you have these cross-platform CMake grip files with their own language, and then you generate for different build systems. And it also helps for going across different versions of Visual Studio, too. Do people find that useful for migrating even in the same build system?
Sure, it does. I mean, I've seen when I started CMake, I remember working with some companies, and what they typically did with Visual Studio, even one version of Visual Studio was a little bit hard to maintain, because if you wanted to reference external libraries or sets of libraries that a company might have, there were common tricks like they would set up the Visual Studio projects to reference, you know, the Z colon drive.
Yeah.
And all the developers would have to set up a Z colon drive that had certain directory names in it so that they could actually do the build. And with something like CMake, it dynamically builds it on the system no matter where the developer wants to put it, and it figures it all out and creates a project. But again, yeah, if some of the developers are using Visual Studio 9, some of them are using Visual Studio 10, those are completely different project files, and if you store those, you'd have to store both in your version control system, and then that leads to duplication, which of course is the great evil of computer programming.
That's right. Duplication
must be eradicated.
That's right, very good. So it's a cross-platform build system, but it also has tools for configuration, like AutoConf or tools like that for getting environment-specific.
Sure, what you're talking about is system introspection.
Yeah.
And any build system that's going to work across a variety of platforms is going to have to inspect that platform when it runs and find out what's installed on it, what capabilities it has, what various options are available to the developer, because the modern computer is very complicated and can have lots of different options, and the only way you can really handle that is to actually inspect the exact machine you're building on right at the point before you're about to build and determine, you know, which version of the compiler. Even different versions, the same version of Visual Studio might have a service pack that fixed some previously known bug that the code may or may not have a workaround for, and you need to let it know that you don't need to use that workaround anymore. So it allows the programmer to program to the canonical system instead of specific system.
Excellent. How did CMake come about?
CMake came about from the NIH effort to create the Insight Toolkit to work with the visible human data, which was a project by the National Institutes of Health where they took bodies donated to science, and when they died, they CT, PET scan, MR scan, and collected all these data sets, every kind of scan they could think of, and then they did what they usually can't do with a patient. They froze the body solid and sliced it as thin as they could and took actual pictures, which created a really neat data set for researchers because they could check to whether their segmentation algorithm was working or not, because they could actually, if you did a CT scan and you segmented out the heart, say, you could look at the actual slice inside the person and see whether it was correct. And once they had that data set out there, Terry Yu at the NIH had the foresight to see that the real problem is not just having the data out there, but also the state-of-the-art in algorithms. And he started a project called the Insight Toolkit, which essentially took the state-of-the-art in research algorithms and created an open source platform for putting the reference implementation for various segmentation and registration algorithms out into the public domain. And Kit Ware was one of the early team members working on ITK, and we were tasked with building it. Not necessarily creating a build system or tool, but we had to build it, and we were given the constraints that it had to work on Linux, Windows, and Mac.
So you had an itch to scratch, and you solved it, and it's open source, and now it's become very popular in scientific computing, but also in computing in general for C++ projects. Katie, you're at the Argonne National Labs. How do you use it, and what projects have you seen that use it?
Well, I personally use, I'll just talk about my own personal project to avoid any export control issues, but I work on a fuel cycle simulator for the nuclear fuel cycle, which is to say it models the top level industrial cycle of materials through nuclear power production. And I mostly wrote this code in C++ over the course of my graduate student tenure at the University of Wisconsin, and it's actually gotten a lot of use so far out of other folks in the community, and part of that success is that it's easy to run and build, and that's because I built it with CMake. We chose CMake originally because I really needed an alternative to AutoTools, and I was aware of it as an easy alternative to the confusion that is AutoTools. I would just point out, like, you guys haven't mentioned so far, but I would say that the most beneficial part of using CMake is that you can open a CMake list file and read it in such a way that it is comprehensible to an English speaker. So the CMake language has a good syntax for understandability between collaborators, and I've found it really useful.
So it is easy to use? And
yeah, absolutely. I've found that it's incredibly easy to use and easy to explain to people because it doesn't involve the sort of peculiar or complicated syntax that AutoTools has led me to in the past.
Right, it has very few dependencies, and it has the CMake build system, but there's also the C-test testing system and the C-dash dashboard system that runs
on the
server.
I use C-test, so my tests are written in Google Test, but there's a nice test harness that was written by someone at ITK and that I now use in conjunction with C-test in order to run my tests.
Cool. So C-test is a tool for running unit tests. And David, how does that work with C-dash?
C-test is the CMake suite of tools, actually. We have three different command line tools, CMake, C-test, and CPAC. And C-test was written so that we could control how tests are run after the project is built. And so right in your CMake list file, you can describe a set of tests that you want to run after your project is built. For example, on the VDK project, we have tests that produce a render window that has a certain image in it, and then we take a snapshot of that image after the test is done running, and then we'll compare that to an expected image. And so if the test runs and the image is different, then we say that the test failed, and C-test is the thing that can run to drive those tests. In addition to actually running the tests, it actually records all the results in files, and then after it's done, it can submit those files to a C-dash server. And the C-dash server is this web app that's just running on a server on the internet, and is sitting there waiting for results to come in from C-test runs in computers all around the world. When the program runs and sends the results up to C-dash, people who have committed code to that project can go and look at the C-dash server to see whether the code that they just committed, the test still runs successfully, or if this code possibly has introduced some problems.
Right, so. Right. So, and then there's CPAC, and how does that work?
CPAC is, Bill described CMake and how it's this cross-platform build system generator. CPAC is similar in that it's cross-platform. It uses, just as CMake uses all the different native build environments, CPAC will take the install rules that you can write in a CMakeList file, and it will put the install tree for you, and then package it up using some kind of native packaging tool. So on Windows, it knows how to build NSYS installers. On the Mac, it knows how to build Package Maker installers or drag and drop installers. And on Linux, we have RPM and dev packaging file CPAC generators.
Cool.
I think that's one of the goals of CMake, essentially to take these things that many developers don't want to spend the time to learn and codify it into the CMake code. So prior to creating CPAC, even the CMake release, there was one guy at Kitware that knew how to use the Wise installer system, and it was installed on one computer at Kitware. And if you wanted to do a release and he was on vacation, you couldn't. And no one knew how it worked, and it was this magic black box that one guy spent the time to figure out how it worked. And then we created CPAC, which would allow us to create installers essentially at the click of a button, and even without being logged onto the machine. And this really increased our ability to get things done and to sort of do agile programming. And much the way, same way, you know, CMake allows developers to create shared libraries and DLLs and loadable modules. There are very obscure flags and strange, weird incantations that you have to do to make that work across Mac and the various versions of Linux and Unix. And CMake takes all that magic away. I mean, if you Google how to create a shared library, there's pages and pages of text and strange-looking flags that are different for every compiler and every version. And even on Linux, there's all kinds of different ways of doing it. And CMake hides all that from the developer and gives them a simple thing where they say, create a shared library for me, or create, you know, an installer package for me. And you don't have to worry about that. You can essentially outsource that to the CMake developers. And I think that's one of the real more powerful features that CMake provides.
Yeah, so, and CMake is getting to be pretty mature, but there's still a lot of activity going on in terms of commits that are made in adding more features like that. What are some of the more recent features that you've been working on adding?
Some of the more recent, the last CMake release, 2.8.6, from I think it was early October, a couple months ago, we had one of the guys that has contributed stuff from across the pond in Europe wrote this module called Generate Export Headers. And that is a new CMake module that allows you to basically point it at one of your libraries, and it will generate headers for you so that you don't have to export your entire library as a public API. You can mark up what classes you want exported, and it will generate the right markup for you. So you can build a DLL on Windows and export things from it without really being an expert at it.
So that's only for Windows?
Well, it's also, they've generalized it using the new GCC attribute, the visibility attribute stuff, so it'll work on Linux and Mac as well.
Cool.
So that's one of the newer features. And then there's the Fortran stuff that...
So what are the issues with Fortran, and what niceties have you made for Fortran programs they don't have to learn anymore?
Love it or hate it, Fortran is really the language of numerical computing. So it's, you know, and all the LAPACK libraries are built in Fortran, and CMake's actually been working really closely with that community to help them build LAPACK Fortran modules cross-platform. And we've added some, due to the support from some of the groups, the Trulinos project and the Dakota project have been supporting CMake directly here at Kitware, and they have a very strong interest in Fortran codes building cross-platform. So there's actually some really strong features that people may not realize that are in CMake. For example, CMake has a full Fortran parser built into it. And this is to handle the module building order for Fortran 90. So Fortran 90 has, very similar to Java in its approach to handling external modules. So inside a Fortran module, you might say, you know, import from module A. And basically, you have to make sure that A.Fortran was compiled before anybody that said import A. And the normal workflow for engineers that are working with Fortran is they write a make file, and they type make 5 or 6 times until everything gets built. And they just let the errors happen over and over, and it sort of eventually converges into a build. Whereas CMake, the first time you type make, it actually computes a dependency tree and figures out which files need to be compiled first so that the modules are produced and they are for the ones that are consuming them. So it has a whole producer-consumer chain that it builds at make time.
Cool.
And it builds that. Another thing that CMake does is allows for cross-language use of Fortran. So it actually, if you include both C or C++ and Fortran in the same project, CMake will automatically determine what the runtime libraries are for Fortran and the runtime paths. Mm-hmm. And then if you have your C or C++ program and you link to a Fortran library inside your project, it will automatically add those extra flags that you need to get the Fortran runtime involved. Then one of the more exciting features, I think, for me, for the Fortran, is I've been working on being able to transparently use, or as transparently as possible, use the GNU Fortran compiler in a Microsoft environment. Previous to this, really the only way to get a Fortran project built on Windows was to purchase the Intel compiler, which for the just the Intel Fortran compiler is about $1,000 a seat, which is a steep price even for commercial companies, but especially for academics and researchers. And what I've created is a system inside CMake that you can call a special adds Fortran subdirectory. And if you do have the Intel compiler, it just essentially does a pass through to add subdirectory where all the magic Fortran stuff happens in CMake. But if it detects that you're on using Visual Studio and you don't have the Fortran add-in for that, it actually uses the external project command, which we'll probably talk about a little bit later, in a special way to create a MinGW GFortran. It searches for that compiler in your system and then secretly runs GMake from inside the Visual Studio IDE, builds it, and creates the Microsoft import library so that Microsoft can use the DLL created by the GFortran library. And again, this is something that's documented on the web, and it's something that anybody could do, but it's one of those black hat things like creating an installer that only a few people know how to do. And essentially we've taken that and coded it in CMake, and it's a nice little nugget there that should essentially provide a free Fortran compiler, which will allow the LPAC folks to stop creating F to C and CLPAC.
Right.
And that was essentially the big roadblock, is that there wasn't a free Fortran compiler that was easy to use on Windows. And I believe this new feature in CMake will provide a way to do that without having to buy a compiler.
Great, that's awesome. So when do you think is that going to be released? When will that release?
That should be, we're working on getting that into this current release of CMake, the 2.8.7, which should be probably finalized in another
couple weeks. It's in RC1 of 2.8.7, actually.
Very
basic
cool
support for it.
It's really impressive. I think that obviously you know this, but the level to which this will benefit academic and national lab communities is pretty extraordinary.
Other ways CMake works with other projects and languages outside of your typical vanilla C++ project,
mm-hmm.
There's some support for wrapping dynamic languages.
Python
and Java.
Like, there's a full kind of custom command, custom target model,
mm-hmm.
where you can basically run anything you want as a build step.
Right.
And so a lot of projects use that to, they have their own kind of wrappers that they actually build from source code. So they build a wrapping tool, then they'll run their wrapping tool against some of their header files, and then that generates some more code that needs to be compiled. So VTK does this, for example. It has its own kind of wrapper tools that generate Python, Tickle, and Java for the VTK objects. And then it's completely built together with custom commands and custom targets inside the CMake list files for the VTK project. There's a used Swig module in CMake that allows you to use Swig to generate similar types of wrappers for any kind of project. Swig is fairly general and supports something like 20 wrapped languages around it. So there's that support too.
So CMake was originally developed for scientific projects where you're working on a big server, but cross-compiling support, how has that evolved? Or what's the status of that?
Cross-compiling support, we have, so the guy who did most of that work in CMake is Alex, and he's one of the big KDE contributors too. The cross-compiling support, you have to have to define a toolchain file that like kind of points CMake towards the tools that generate code for your target platform. So it's a little bit different than how CMake worked in the beginning. The host and the target were assumed to be the same machine, the machine that CMake is running on. And now with cross-compiling support, you can specify all the different toolchain tools in this toolchain file, and then CMake will generate the right makefiles for using those tools for your target platform.
I think it's sort of interesting that cross-compiling stuff, as you said, came out of our work with supercomputers,
right,
which was the Paraview project, which was actually what funded Alex Nirndorf to create the initial cross-compiling support. And I find it a little bit ironic and strange, however you want to call it, that a supercomputer, programming on a supercomputer, say a Cray XT6, is much the same as programming on an iPhone.
Yeah.
And then each of the nodes on that is very similar to a mobile device or some small computing device. Mm-hmm. It's just there's a whole lot of them, and you don't really have access to them. And you know, although they're running Linux, they're running some stripped-down version, and they don't have compilers.
Right.
And you usually have some front-end place where you build your stuff and then port to it. So the process for which you develop really, really the world's most giant computers and the world's tiniest computers is the same. And CMake is leveraging that and creating these this way of doing tool chains and cross compiling. You have to change the way you do things a little bit. For example, when you're doing system introspection, you can't do a try run because you're on your build platform, you won't be able to actually run the tools, which has led to some interesting thing that Brad King actually developed, some real magic, where he can actually figure out sizes of pointers and byte order without actually running it. Initially in CMake, we would sort of compile a small program that would spit out the size when you ran it. And through the magic of preprocessor definitions and stuffing strings into the executables and then grepping for those strings, he can get all that information essentially at compile time.
Cool.
Which is cool. Some other magic that's encoded in CMake.
Cool.
CMake actually is full of these little nuggets of things that are documented out there somewhere that you know one or two people in the world know how to do, and they've essentially taught CMake how to do it, and then you provide easy access to all the CMake users to those features.
Come on now, it's not really magic. I mean, you know, it's an open source project, all the source code is there, anybody who reads the source code and analyzes it and can figure this stuff out, it's not really magic.
So I
anything sufficiently beyond what you can do yourself is indistinguishable from magic.
That's true. And the contributors to CMake have really taken off, it seems like, in the last year or two.
I think it's probably about the same level or maybe slightly better than it used to be in terms of number of people contributing stuff to CMake.
Yeah.
But it's definitely easier to track now that we're using Git as our version control system. So for the last year, we've been doing these releases every quarter or so, and it's very easy to compile the Git short log of changes that are in a certain release. And you can look at the number of contributors based on that short log. And it's anywhere from 20 to 35 people are contributing code to CMake every quarter.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Very amazing.
From all around the world.
Can you talk about your developer base? Who are these 20?
Who are these people?
I
don't know. I mean, you know, they just appeared on the mailing list and have, you know, pushed patches towards us, and they look reasonable, so we get to know them. And there's guys from Germany and France. Our big contributor for RPM and dev packaging stuff is this guy named Eric from France, and he's great. I mean, he does all the work for the RPM and dev packaging stuff, and he actually fixes bugs that people submit in the bug tracker, and he cares about it. He wants it to be good support. So,
what makes a good support person from the open source community if you wanted to get involved? Would it be stuff like adding modules or answering stuff in the bug tracker? What do you guys need the most?
Yeah, I think all of the above. I mean, I would love to see more people get involved just by fixing things that are already known to be incorrect under some situations. But the bugs in the bug tracker, there are some that are very urgent, right? Somebody reports a crash, then we need to fix it right away. But then there's some that are like, you know, kind of fringe case where it only affects a few people, and everybody's busy, so not everybody has the time to fix things that are only going to benefit like one or two people. But if the people who actually need to use those things can submit a patch to us, and we can apply that patch and then observe that applying the patch doesn't have any negative impact on any of our dashboard testing, which for CMake's case, we test on 10 or more platforms easily every night. We check some code in one day and look at the dashboard results the next day, we can pretty much tell whether or not it's a reasonable change. So, you know, I think fixing bugs first, helping us identify places where the documentation is lacking is important. It was great to hear you say that, you know, CMake has very easy to understand language. You know, I would agree that it's easy to read through a CMake list file, but it's very difficult, I think, for people to figure out how to write them well.
It's a little different bird, right?
Yeah, and so fixing bugs, improving documentation.
I have one thing. I'll do an early rant.
Yeah.
One easy way to contribute to CMake is to try the RCs when they come out, when they're in the release process. That's one of my big pet peeves with CMake. I don't know how many times we do the final release, and we announce it, and within an hour, some guy says, hey, this doesn't work for my thing. And we've sent out, you know, 9 RCs, and that bug's been in each and every one of them. And that guy waited until we announced the final release before trying any of them. And then comes up and says, hey, this is broken. It worked in the last version. And that really just makes me very sad.
Yeah, that's good. That's a great way to start our rant section. So that's a good rant. Very good. David, did you ever rant?
My rant is on people who complain about stuff, but they're not willing to do anything about it. So
okay.
I mean, if you want to complain that CMake is lacking in some way or C-Dash sucks because of this or that, then okay. You know, step up to the plate and
what's your favorite C-Dash sucks comment?
No, I don't have a favorite.
Oh, you don't have a favorite.
I don't like any of them.
Fair enough. Yeah, definitely. Well, it is open source, so people are welcome to fix it.
I think one thing I wanted that we kind of skipped over with C-Dash that mm-hmm. I wanted to throw in there is that it's a very distributed system. I mean, it's got probably its number one competitor, the Hudson system, which I think is a very good system and has its applications. But one of mm-hmm. the things that C-Dash/C-Test does much better, which applies to open source projects, is allows this very distributed model of contribution. So when someone comes to me and says, hey, I want to port CMake to this new fancy platform/compiler, and I'm pretty much the only person in the world that has access to that system, I say, great, yeah, sure, I'd love to help you if you're willing to contribute a dashboard at least once a day, a nightly dashboard that pulls from CMake, and it shows up on our dashboard. And that's worked out really great. And people say, oh, yeah, sure, I can do that. Or, well, you know, I can't. I said, because I don't want to invest the time into getting it working on your system and your compiler, because eventually what will happen is we'll break it. And yeah. if we're not running yeah. continuous testing, then it's just a waste of time to put the investment into getting that code into CMake in the first place. But C-Test and C-Dash allow for this very distributed system. I don't need access or SSH keys on your machine. You just set up a cron job and run C-Test every night. I can send you a simple script that you run, and you runs on your local system and sends us some XML files, and they show up.
Excellent.
Which is another easy way to get involved in any of these open source projects that use C-Dash is run a dashboard on one of your machines and submit it. Doesn't matter where you are, if you have internet access somewhere in the world, to be able to pull from our Git repositories to get the latest code and then send some testing results up to our C-Dash server.
And you run a public C-Dash for people's own projects, right?
Yeah, on my.cdash.org, you can, right. If you have a project of your own and you want to have a dashboard, you can try it for free on my.cdash.org. And I think we allow up to 10 submissions a day for free mm-hmm. on any project in the world.
Right, you won't need a server that way.
Yep.
That's nice. Katie, did you have a rant for today?
Oh, well, I recently discovered that Visual Studio implants these intermediate directories in your build, and so I'm now working through that, but thankfully the CMake wiki has some answers, so I'll be through that sometime this week.
Good. Well, hopefully you can survive through that ordeal.
Yeah.
For my rant, I just like to talk a little bit about a general problem people have, or I've had in the past, and I see it happen when you're computing. It's the problem of wishful thinking. It's something you don't want to do. I was reading this book, The Clean Coder, that Luis gave to me, and
indoctrination.
Yeah, I'm being indoctrinated. And he talked about the enemy of all programmers, and I think it applies to just research in general, is hope. But I don't think it's hope. But this is more like wishful thinking, where you think you're going to write up this great program, and it's all going to compile the first time through, and it's going to pass all the tests the first time through, and then your simulation is going to follow your theoretical analysis perfectly, and you'll be able to submit that paper within the next week, and it just never happens that way. You know, you always have problems, you always encounter unexpected issues, and you just are setting yourself up for disappointment, it seems like, if you don't recognize that law.
Yeah, I think that's probably the same human psychology that makes lottery tickets so popular.
Yeah. So, on that high note, we'll finish it.
I've got a cure for that, by the way. All okay. you have to do is become the release manager for a project. And, you know, eventually you get accustomed to the fact that something bad happens every week. And it's okay. You'll survive till next week, and you'll put the release out anyway, even if it has a couple bugs in it.
You just become immune to things.
Yeah, I think that's one of the cool things Dave brings up that we got into with CMake was setting a quarterly release cycle. Ready or not, here we come. CMake's coming out once a quarter. And what that did was relieve the pressure for the developers. And when we sort of did it randomly, when we felt like there was a reason to have a release or there were enough new features, no one knew when the next one was going to be. So whenever there was one, there was this huge push to get as much as you could get in there because you didn't know when the next one was going to be. It could be 6 months, could be 8 months. So everybody was scared, and essentially that's like the anti-pattern for coding because everybody jams a whole bunch of new features in there and you make a release, and they're guaranteed to be full of bugs. But now it's like, if you missed the release, no big deal.
Right.
There's always
another opportunity.
A few more months, it'll be coming out. You know, the months fly by. Before you know it, the next one's out. So people don't panic as much, and I think it makes the code a lot more stable.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, that's all the scientific computing insight we have for today. You can find us at insight.org. That's INSCIGHT.org. And on Twitter, Convor, and GitHub, or email us at info@insight.org. The Insight Podcast is a co-production of nThought Incorporated, SoftwareCarpentry.org, The Hacker Within, and Kitware Inc. Thanks for listening.